Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me today, and I hope in a much warmer climate than I am, is...
No, it's 38 degrees here.
Oh.
And... you know, one of these days, I'm going to say I'm not retired Lieutenant Frank Borelli. I'm not going to give out my birth name because I was an adopted kid, or I'm going to use a pseudonym or an AKA or something else, you know, just to mix it up a little bit. But sorry for everybody, you're stuck with plain old Frank Borelli today.
Well, I'm glad to be stuck with you today. I'm sorry you're also dealing with the cold weather. I'm actually looking at snow-covered roofs, so I'm...
You beat that.
I want to get rid of it right now, but we will get started. We've got a loaded show as always. Our first story, we're going to go to Idaho, where this is what sounds like a scene out of a movie. A gunman helped free a Idaho inmate who was taken to a hospital for treatment. The two then were on the run for a few days, and thankfully, I believe yesterday, the authorities captured them, caught up with them. Unfortunately, while they were on the run, they are now linked to two murders that were committed during that time. Just an amazing stuff. Three Department of Corrections officers were injured. Two were shot by the gunman helping with the escape, and a third was shot by responding police officers. For all of this also to unfold at a hospital, even scarier.
You know, I don't know if this is a television episode of Criminal Minds or Grey's Anatomy or NCIS. I mean, this has all of the hallmarks of somebody who really wanted to schedule out a drama and scripted it carefully. It's the biggest concern I have, obviously. The one that I think is probably the most avoidable was the one officer that got shot by the responding police officers. The blue on blue, the friendly fire shootings are always a situation that we can have that we have to look out for. I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong. I mean, everybody acts on the best information they have in the moment. It's just a shame to see it, and I'm glad everybody that's is going to heal and be okay. The officers that shot the other officer are certainly going to feel that guilt and question their judgment for quite a long time. I'm glad these two criminals, you know, got captured. It's a shame that there's two more murders along the way. There's a side of me that says I'm sorry they were captured rather than other options, but I'll leave that. I recently had a conversation with HR about saying things I'm not supposed to say, so I'm going to try to mind my manners today.
Well, both of these individuals were members of a white supremacist group, and apparently...
No surprise.
Right, and authorities described this as a coordinated attack. I believe they both were serving time together at one point. And so clearly, in some way, figured out a way to do this, but... yeah, and like you said, I can. This is going to be probably, and maybe by the end of the year, going to pop up in like Law and Order or something, is one of those ripped from the headlines type of storylines. But Thankfully, now they're back in custody, and I know they're still investigating as far as their connection to these two other murders. In one of the cases, the inmate shackles were left at the scene of one of the murders. So that's how they're connecting the two with that. So we'll see how this goes. Moving on to our next story. This is out of St. Louis, and I guess I'll call it a bit of a trend of officers being either dragged or caught up in vehicles during traffic stops and being pulled away in some cases, what constitutes kidnapping, other cases just being hanging on for dear life before they're thrown off. This out of St. Louis, video captured an officer trying to stop a fleeing accused thief from the scene of a parking garage. There was a report that he was checking, this individual was checking locked doors to see if they're car doors to see if they're locked. He was confronted by the officer. The suspect tries to drive away and the officer is caught in the car, and is sort of caught in between a rock and a hard place, if you will, of having to try to either let go of your, get out of the vehicle and roll to safety, or try to stop an individual who's driving a car and make sure that both of you get out of that alive.
You know, the problem is you never know if you drop to safety, like you said, and roll away, you don't know that's going to happen. True. Sometimes, number one, you're caught. You can't drop and get away. You're stuck. A piece of your vest or clothing or something is caught in a window or a door or whatever it might be. And then number two, you don't know that when you do get away, that vehicle's not going to roll over you. There's just no safe play here. And I've known officers dragged by cars. You get into the big challenge when they start shooting at the driver because they're being dragged by cars. And if I'm not wrong, we have another story we're getting ready to discuss. It's much the same thing out of Florida. The deputies fighting with a suspect in a moving vehicle. It's a very, very dangerous situation. It happens way more than anybody's aware of. And I'm glad. I'm glad we don't lose more officers to these types of situations. Injuries are very common, whether it's abrasions, broken bones, whatever it is. Thankfully, we're not losing more officers and deaths by incidents like these. That's a spectacularly dangerous place to be, being dragged by a car, caught in a vehicle, outside, on the hood, whatever. They've got the entire vehicle to use against you. And sometimes there is no getaway. So I'm glad this is not as, it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Right. And we've talked about more and more the vehicle is being used as a weapon in crimes now. That along with either a knife or a gun, this is something that criminals are using to defend themselves or as an offensive weapon. Like you said, there also this week in Florida, Pasco County, where a deputy had to make that decision. Here he is caught in a car after he had seen the suspect at the gas station. He was a suspect in a previous battery case, confronts the individual during this time, ends up in the car as the suspect is driving away, and now has to make the decision. How do I end this incident? In this case, the officer drew his weapon and shot the suspect, fatally shooting the individual. But throughout the whole video, you see in the body cam, he's telling the suspect to stop, stop the car, get out, surrender, does not comply, and is left with two really not great choices, but at least is going to get out of there with his life.
You mentioned before we finished our conversation about the last video, you mentioned there, the guns and the knives. The thing is this: not every traffic stop or citizen encounter has a gun or a knife, right? But every traffic stop has a car, has a vehicle, has a potentially lethal weapon that can be used against the officer if the officer doesn't stay on his guard, if they put themselves in a bad position, if the driver's willing to do the harm. In this one, there's going to be somebody out there critical that this officer put himself in a position where he didn't have any choice but to use lethal force, and that they really don't know what's going on. They weren't there. No matter how much we look at video, we can't understand what was going on between the officer's ears when he made the decisions, and we need to remember that. I'm glad the officer's okay. I'm not going to lose sleep over a convicted criminal that we're not going to spend time keeping alive now.
Well, let me ask you, Frank, too, is when they're in this case of you're in a vehicle where you're not the driver, you're not in control, and you're trying to get it stopped. I mean, that's got to be you. I mean, there's not a really a good way to do that, to, you know, to subdue the driver and then also be able to take control of the vehicle to make sure you're not injured, but also not to make sure that car doesn't crash into anyone else either and injure innocent bystanders.
100%. It's a crappy situation all the way around. And there are strict constitutional law guidelines about when we can shoot a felon and when we can't, when deadly force is authorized and when it's not. So this officer is going to have to, or would have to, defend his decision why he had no other option but to use this lethal force. And absolutely, he had to take into consideration where he was going to be, where the car was going to be, what the surroundings were, everything else about that. This is one of the ugliest situations I can think of being in. It's almost like the equivalent of being in the middle of a crowded theme park with somebody shooting a gun, and you have no clear background because there's just people everywhere. And if you don't shoot him, he's going to continue to shoot other people. And if you shoot at him and your bullet goes through or you miss, then you might hit the innocent bystander. And there's a no-win situation for you. And that's what this guy had faced. I'm glad he came out of it all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to our next story. This is out of Texas in Houston. And if we had a bigger budget, Frank, I'd ask you to play the Little Rascals music over this. But Houston authorities in Houston apprehended three accused bank robbers. They're being called the Little Rascals Trio. Their ages are 11, 12, and then the senior member, 16, who went into a Wells Fargo bank in Houston, showed a teller a threatening note, and then took off with an undisclosed amount of cash. I'm laughing about this now, kind of making a joke out of it. But at the same time, you and I have talked about stories where the suspect in question is around the same age, but is carrying a gun or, you know, firing at police officers involved in a violent crime. I mean, I don't want to sound like the pearl clutching PTA mom of like, think of the children type of situation, but you know, this is how it starts. You know, this is where the roots of career criminals.
Forgive me. This is not where it started. Okay. When you've got kids 11, 12, and 16 that are robbing a bank, trust me, this is not their first crime. This is not where it's starting. Number one. Number two, in the story, it says, so the police department released the images, you know, hoping to identify these kids. And it prompted a series of calls with tips about the trio. Now, this is the really cool part, including from the parents of two of the kids. If the parents are more than willing to call the police saying, oh, that's my kid, he's robbed the bank. Yeah, no, there, one of two things is going on. Either they're really scared that the police are going to shoot their kid, which is in today's world a realistic possibility, or they're like, yep, that's my kid. I'm not surprised a bit. Please go arrest his little young butt. No, this is not where this started. These guys, and maybe there's a ringleader. Maybe the 16-year-old's manipulating the 11, the 12-year-old. Maybe they're trying to be cool. Maybe they're all trying to enter a gang. Don't know. Don't care. This young robbing a bank, these are either absolutely career criminals in the offing, or this is the best opportunity for an intervention I've ever seen in my life.
There's the optimist in me that hopes that, because a lot of times when you see suspect, the kids of this age committing these types of crimes, I've seen it around here where they're enlisted by gangs to steal cars and things like that because of their age. It's makes it easier as far as them to navigate the justice system, so to speak. I haven't necessarily heard of bank robbery. Like I said, there's the optimist in me that hopes that, you know, it was this is their first bad thing they did, and there's like, we're gonna rob a bank, and you know, they've learned their lesson. I know you can, you know, get rid of that notion in my head, Frank, if you want, because I think I'm wrong, but I'd like to have that hope on this Friday. But
I mean, it's always good to be hopeful. It's always good to be an optimist, but it's also good to be a realist. And you know, you're right. This may have been a gang initiation thing. It may have been whatever. They weren't displaying firearms. They just passed a threatening note. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can look at this and go, okay, well, maybe this wasn't as bad as it could have potentially been. One of these kids fought with the police before they were arrested.
Yeah.
That shows a distinct lack of respect for authority and the law at this young age. Somebody's convinced them they can get away with this, and this would be a cool thing to do. And to me, it's frightening. I dare say my children would not have considered going there. They'd have been afraid I just showed up and shot them. I mean, they'd have been like, nope, dad will come get me. I know what's going to happen when dad gets hold of me. I am at an utter loss for the ages are, but let's, Joe, put this in perspective. We had a pair of, you know, we talk about active shooter events all the time. We had a pair of school shooters at one point that were 11 and 13 years old, and they conspired together. One got it in a shooting position. One pulled the fire alarm in the school to get everybody to come out to the playground where the other one started shooting. Children this age, we call them children, the people this age are perfectly capable of having that evil in their heart, and we got to deal with it. Unfortunately, as cops, we have to deal with it.
Right. No, and again, puts those officers in unfortunate situations sometimes. Thankfully, it sounds like no violence had to happen in apprehending these kids. So, and hopefully, again, I'm going to stay optimistic and that they've learned their ways, or that they've learned their lesson and they'll mend their ways. But I'm probably wrong in that case, but
we'll stay optimistic. Happy
there
Friday.
There we go. Moving on to our next story. This is out of California, where the Murrieta Police Department has found an interesting way to handle a new state law dealing with mugshots. Under California law now, mugshots are, police are not allowed to post mugshots on social medias when it deals with suspects in non-violent offenses. So in an effort though to maintain the transparency, the Murrieta Police Department is still releasing their mugshots, except instead of having the suspects' faces in them, they are replacing them with Lego heads. It's kind of hilarious. They have on their website or on their Facebook page have posted a lineup of various Lego offenders. I don't know if this is just a way to sort of needle California lawmakers when it comes to this law, or if it's just someone in the department with a creative streak in him or her. But it makes for some interesting social media browsing if you go through some of these mugshots.
I'm two observations here.
Yes.
I think that California is kind of going out of their way to mollycoddle people who commit crimes. I get it. We're not going to put up mugshots of nonviolent suspects. Well, somebody who walks into a store and steals $950 worth of merchandise is a nonviolent suspect. If they don't, all they do is pick up stuff and leave. They're just a criminal. They're just a thief, right? If they go in and they steal $5,000, they're still a nonviolent suspect. If they go steal a car, they're a nonviolent suspect. If they're a pedophile sitting on the park bench watching the kids play, trying to hand out candy, they're a nonviolent suspect. I have a problem with this. I think that the embarrassment of having their faces pasted online is a detriment. It's a deterrence. But I got to tip my hat to, for the people who don't realize what goes on here, if you look at the officer.com website and you look at this particular article, the new law has California Police Department toying with how it shares mugshots. And then the image that they use put little Lego faces over all the criminals' faces on the it's a lineup picture. It's hilarious. Whoever did this, and Joe, if you did that, kudos to you. I love the wordplay. It's toying and it's Lego's faces. I'm not a fan of this, Joe. I think that you commit the crime, put your face on social media, let everybody know who you are, what you did. I think that's often a bigger deterrence than you might go to jail for some amount of time, or you might get a fine, you might go to court. No. Hey, all your neighbors and your workmates know you did this dumb stuff.
You know, I'm gonna kind of echo statements you've talked about before as far as being critical of the media. I don't think the onus should be put on police departments, that this is more on media. Media has used mugshots as kind of an easy way for now in this very image driven society of how to make stories jump out online and things like that. And it's become easy. And I, as a journalist, have kind of understand some of the issues as far as there's the arrest picture, and then there's the fact that they may or may not ever end up being convicted for whatever they were arrested for. I don't necessarily think that it's on these are public records. I don't necessarily think it's on the police department's shoulders that they shouldn't be disseminating this one, that they should, that they're the ones who have to be the arbiters of whether or not this is fair to the individuals. I think that's really on journalists. And okay. I'm glad that this department is finding a fun way of at least trying to say, hey, we're trying to be transparent. The state's not letting us. I'm very much of a lot of this information should be, it's public record, it should be available, but it's up to us, and by us as journalists, whether or not we should be using it and using the discretion there. But I'm curious too if other departments in California will jump on this or come up with maybe even more creative ways of doing this. Who knows?
Well, let's see. Just hope it stays entertaining.
Yes. Moving on to our next story. This is out of California, and I want to say this is the second story of this year where we have, it's driver versus ocean, and guess who wins? This was a case of a chase with the California Highway Patrol of and a woman who was trying to officers are trying to stop her for speeding, decides she doesn't want to stop. Chase goes on till it finally reaches the coast, and the driver tries to, I guess, drive to Asia. Takes the SUV right into the ocean. And like I said, ocean one, driver zero.
You know, I hate to tell people this, but Mother Nature is kind of always going to win. I love your driving to Asia remark. So, you know, this is going to be the stupid criminal of the week story for us, I guess. But I have two really, really big problems with this. One, she abandoned her dogs. She left two dogs in the surf. And thank God lifeguards rescued the dogs. And then she gets pulled out of the ocean by patrol boat. Was she suicidal? Was she disconnected from reality and thought she really could swim to China? Maybe she was just on her way to Hawaii, so it's not as far away. I don't know. This is one of those things when you see people going for the surf, you know where this is going to end up. I'm not going swimming after her, especially not in full gear. I'm going to sink like a rock, you know. But lady, you're either going to die or you can't outrun the radio. So is she suicidal? What started out is probably going to be a traffic stop with a couple of tickets issued. Probably, best case scenario, ended up with a bunch of traffic tickets and an arrest for fleeing and eluding. and maybe even animal cruelty. I think I would throw that on there just for good cause. Or maybe she just got committed for psychiatric evaluation because that's a lot less paperwork and left her in the care of a shrink for 72 hours and took the dogs to the local pound. You know, I don't know, but I don't care if it's a BMW X3. It can't surf. They need to learn this.
I feel like it's opposite day because I'm going to maybe echo some things that you have said before. I think in a lot of these cases, I don't even think it's a mental crisis. I think it's the crisis of, oh crap, I'm going to get caught for something. And I'm just going to, you know, if I keep running, they're just going to give up eventually. I'm a speeder. Like, how much effort do you really need to go through to catch me? If I go into the ocean, boy, no one's going to come after me. Exactly. I think there's just that that desperation of, especially for people who might never have been involved in breaking the law, I think there ends up being a desperation. And I think they do know what they're doing in a lot of ways, and they're just hoping that they're the one person who gets away with it.
excuse me, and you may be right. We wouldn't know unless we could actually talk to her and be assured of her cognizant conversation, rational conversation. That's how we would find out.
But yeah, I'm going to keep speculating like that, apparently. So anyway, moving on to our last story. This is staying in California. This was just great to see. This was from the Los Angeles Marathon. An LAPD officer who was working the race helped a teenage runner really accomplish what that boy was trying to do, which was finish the race. This officer, Sergeant J. Balgemino, and I apologize if I mispronounced the name, was stationed towards the end of the race route, and a 15-year-old runner collapsed near him. Immediately, he went to go help. Medics were called in, evaluated, treated him. But one of the first things that runner asked the officer was, "Did I finish the race?" I believe he was only about 400 meters away. This officer then, along with the runner's sister, carried this clearly exhausted boy across the finish line. So at least he could say, it's like, look, I finished, you know, where he wasn't had to be taken away by medics or just go off to the side. And I want to make clear too, medics did evaluate him. It wasn't like the officer came here and just picked him up and carried him over the finish line. But it was just great to see and an officer really understand. It's like, here was something that meant a lot to this runner and to this teen. Again, we talk about the empathy officers have to show out on the field. And this is a prime example of that.
Yeah. And this is another one of those stories. You've heard me say this a lot of times. You'll hear me say it, I'm sure, a lot more times. This is a perfect example of the humanity of law enforcement, right? All the people in the world who think cops are mean and we're just out here abusing our power and we just want to arrest people and kill people, whatever. Here's a perfect example of an officer who has compassion and is helpful and is serving the community and does the right thing. And kudos to him. I'm not even going to try that last name because I don't know if you said it right, and I'm not going to attempt it. Balgemino. Kudos to that officer. Glad to see him being such a compassionate and caring human being. Excellent example for law enforcement. And if you're not like him, be like him. Model him. His agency ought to be holding him up as a shining example.
Absolutely. And yeah, just again, it seems like just a small thing, but you don't understand the kind of the ripple effect that can have with this young boy, you know, what his feelings towards law enforcement and also just just the idea of, hey, you know, he got to accomplish that thing, and that can mean a lot. So again, kudos. Yes. Kudos to the sergeant. That wraps it up for us this week. Again, thank you very much for listening. And Frank, I hope you stay warm this weekend. I hope this is the last weekend of this early spring that I have to say that to you. But, you know, I hope you have a good weekend.
I'm sure it's going to be grand. We're going to be close to 60 here tomorrow, so I can't complain about the temperatures. You know, we're in the 50s and 60s. It's springtime. That's reasonable. My one complaint, all of my fellow motorcycle riders that listen to these podcasts, our local Harley Davidson dealership has an event tomorrow, demo day, national demo day. So we can go ride any motorcycle we want, and it doesn't cost anything.
Nice.
And it's gonna rain all freaking day. So yeah, but it's going to be near 60, Joe. So it's we're getting there. It's springtime. That's how it's supposed to work.
Great. Well, I hope everyone else has a good weekend, and take care and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.